This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning and welcome back to The Morning Run. I'm Roshan Kanasan with Noel Lim and Kusu Chuang in the studio this morning. In about 15 minutes, we'll be speaking to Rizwan Rahman, Principal Defence Analyst with Jane's by IHS Market on the maritime dispute over the South China Sea, which we seem to be a little bit stuck in the middle there as Petronas sent out a surveying ship there. Now, in the meantime, let's talk about markets. Chuang, how are markets, what's Bloomberg telling us there?
Well, in terms of the rest of the region, well, the Kospi is up by 0.6% to 1,899 points, and the Nikkei is up by 1.5% to 19,554 points. But both are still marking declines on a year-to-date basis of between 13.6% to 17.3%.
Yes, and if we look over the states, they closed on Friday, the Dow up 1.1%, the S&P 500 up 1.4%, and the NASDAQ up 1.7% there. And this was on the back of the jobless claims jumping another 4 million, or was it another 5 million?
4 million. So in total, over 5 weeks, I think it's like 26 million Americans filing for jobless claims.
Now, for more on global markets, we speak to Stephen Innes, Chief Global Market Strategist at Axi Corp. Now, Stephen, thank you for taking the time to speak to us this morning. US and European companies continue to release Q1 results this week. Markets rallied on Friday on the back of a set of reasonable numbers. But what are your expectations going forward?
You know, it's very, very difficult to follow what is happening in these markets, because if you look at any of the indicators in the markets, for instance, the market breadth is rather narrow. Market participation is slim, so there's not a lot of activity. And these earnings numbers that came out last week weren't particularly good. So it suggests that if you're looking to buy at these current levels, you're probably going to have the patience of Job to see this one through. However, this is all about the amount of stimulus that's backstopping markets right now. It's just an enormous amount of stimulus. And realistically, when we look at historical recessions, unlike the past recessions, there's only one recessionary input that needs to get fixed, and that's the virus. There's a lot of optimism here that with the markets reopening, lots of optimism that there could be a therapeutic cure. And fingers are still crossed that at some point over the next 6 months to 1 year, we're going to have a cure for the virus. And I think this is continuing to drive sentiment, although that was arguably butt-ended last week when Gilead came out with really poor trials on the super virus drug. But we have to keep an optimistic view going forward.
Well, let's take a look at oil, because that's still hogging the headlines. When the June oil contracts expire and possibly nowhere else to store more oil coming on stream, how is this going to affect price volatility? And could we see another new low for oil prices?
Oh, the hot takes are just nonstop, aren't they? It's getting to the point where it's a little bit overbearing, really. From a trader's perspective and from a risk management perspective, we know what's happening here, right? You know, we're very cognizant the big banks' risk management policies that will dictate that nobody trades the near contract. So obviously there's going to be a reduction in the front-end contract, and we're already starting to see that from my price discovery this morning looking at the breadth of the futures market here. There's certainly a reduction in the June contract open interest, and also volumes are quite low. What I'm seeing across a breadth of assets, not only oil, is a shift away from the front-end contracts, May, June, into the more further summer end contracts around August and September. This suggests to me that markets are looking to avoid any of the front month steamrollers at all costs. In other words, they're just shifting hedges to the less volatile part of the curve. And I firmly expect that to happen. Look, we're not shutting the markets down, but traders are saying, listen, I don't want any part of this risk until the end of summer.
Okay, Stephen, reports that the Bank of Japan is considering additional monetary stimulus. In your opinion, what kind of measures could they implement if they take that route in today's meeting?
Oh, let's hope they don't cut interest rates. That'll be the worst thing because it's been so ineffective before. I think what we're going to look, have them see here is a move to further the QE here, probably purchase some commercial paper and probably add some more bonds to the portfolios. This is good. But, you know, from my perspective here, I think the writing is on the wall as to how the Bank of Japan is going to address this thing, this overall move here. I think what we're going to see is sort of a Japan's globalization is sort of getting thrown in reverse now. You know, over the past 10 years, decade or plus, that Japan has actually located a lot of their value-added manufacturing abroad. But we see that incentivized to come back home now, and we think that's going to create the next wave of yen appreciation, and it's also going to be used to stimulate the economy, because realistically, central banks are really out of bullets as far as trying to stimulate the economies now with any deeper cuts on interest rates or even trying to increase QE. I mean, all that's getting done right now, and it's still not effective. We still need that, getting back to my analysis again about the one input. Really what it boils down to is just finding a cure for this virus, and that's going to get people back out to work again. Without that happening, I think every global economy is going to suffer.
Well, Japan has had negative interest rates since 2016. So why do they still do this? Why do they still cut interest rates if many people are saying this is not effective?
The one big thing why they have this low interest rate policy is they like to wear what I refer to as the yellow jersey in the peloton to the race cut below zero. In other words, they want to keep interest rates extremely low to make sure that the yen stays weak. That's really the crux of the Bank of Japan's monetary policy. It's all about keeping the yen on a weaker tangent. And frankly, I think that's what the appeal is. Otherwise, they could be getting a lot of repatriation flows coming in. Right now, we're seeing that opposite happen, where there's the pension funds in Japan are actually buying a lot of foreign debt and some equities also. And this is really the reason for it.
Yeah, but that helps exports, keeping the exchange rate low. But has that had some visible impact on the economy?
Absolutely not. And the reason for that is when we're emerging from the lockdown, what's happening is the consumption, the export consumption engines around the world are just simply not firing. They're not firing because everybody's in lockdown. So, you can have a weaker yen, your internal engines can be revving up, your export engines can be revving up. But hey, if there's nobody to ship it to, it's not effective. And that's partially the reason why we're seeing a little bit of a less bounce, lower bounce in China, and why we're seeing a less fervish bounce in Asia, because the export markets that we would normally send to aren't firing on all cylinders right now.
Stephen, so the Bank of Japan is meeting today, but also the European Central Bank and the Fed are meeting this week. Any expectations from those meetings?
Interesting. There's some talk that the Feds may go into negative interest rates. I don't believe that's happening. I think it's too early to make that call. However, those are just going to continually linger in the backdrop. I think the ECB has an interesting dilemma here. Markets are pretty disappointed by the EU Council's backstop last week. Although the euro recovered, I think that was more to do with the peripheral debt recovering after Italy's debt rating got improved. I think looking at those dreary PMI data out of Europe last week, I think there is some room here that the ECB may perhaps not drop interest rates, but at least wax what we call wax dovish. In other words, point their forward guidance lower on rates. And I think probably that's what's going to happen. Again, just out of ammunition. And central banks don't really want to hurt the financial industry even more by dropping interest rates further. Remember, banks depend on higher interest rates to survive. They're huge, huge conglomerates that really buttress the economy through employment. And really, they don't want to punish the banks anymore.
And the Aussie dollar has been performing well against its G10 peers. What's propelling this currency's bullish run?
Well, that was an interesting one. I can never figure out why it was selling off so much and initially, because it really wasn't a carry trade. And the fact that the carry trade unwinded didn't really play to the Australian dollar. I think there's a couple of things here for the Aussie dollar's recent tear. There's evidence that China's bottoming, and that would be reasonable to expect the Australian dollar to be one of the big beneficiaries. We're also looking at the levels of iron ore inventories at Chinese ports. These are actually quite low. So one would expect if the Chinese economy starts firing, that would really increase more demand for iron ore. And of course, the Australian dollar is really built on a mountain of iron ore. And then meanwhile, and this is very critical here, Australia's recent changes to government rules to allow workers to take funds out of their pension pots. This might be something that we have to keep an eye on, because these funds that are getting drawn down would have overseas investments, and they could actually see repatriations of those overseas investments flip back into the Australian dollar. Once again, from a real cash perspective, that's very supportive for the Australian dollar.
All right, Stephen, thank you so much for your time this morning. That was Stephen Innes, Global Chief, Chief Global Market Strategist at Axie Corp. Now, before we go into a few messages, a quick look at oil. The outlook for oil still remains pretty grim as prices continue to fall over the demand destruction caused by COVID-19. Chuang, what are the prices looking like right now?
Well, Brent is at $21 and WTI is about $16, so still in the doldrums. And as Stephen was saying, a lot of the traders are pushing their interest out to the longer-term contracts, such as November, December.
Yeah, I think WTI, which is the US benchmark, has lost more than 70% this year. And top oil producers earlier this month agreed to cut output by 10 million barrels a day starting May to try and stabilize the market. But oil prices still remain low. We're going into a few messages right now. When we come back, we'll be taking a look at maritime issues in the South China Sea. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.